Chapter 13. Rattling noise at a little distance attracted their attention. They looked up. Bless my soul! ! Exclaimed the agonized Mr. Pickwick. There's the other horse running away! ! It was but too true. The animal was startled by the noise, and the reins were on his back. The results may be guessed. He tore off with the four-wheeled chaise behind him, and Mr. Tupman and Mr. Snodgrass in the four-wheeled chaise. The heat was a short one. Mr. Tupman threw himself into the hedge. Mr. Snodgrass followed his example. The horse dashed the four-wheeled chaise against a wooden bridge, separated the wheels from the body, and the bin from the perch, and finally stood stock still, to gaze upon the ruin he had made. The first care of the two unspilt friends was to extricate their unfortunate companions from their bed of quicks at a process which gave them the unspeakable satisfaction of discovering that they had sustained no injury, beyond sundry rents in their garments, and various lacerations from the brambles. The next thing to be done was to unharness the horse. This complicated process having been effected, the party walked slowly forward, leading the horse among them, and abandoning the chaise to its fate. An hour's walk brought the travelers to a little roadside public house, with two elm trees, a horse trough, and a signpost in front, one or two deformed hayricks behind, a kitchen garden at the side, and rotten sheds and moldering outhouses jumbled in strange confusion all about it. A red-headed man was working in the garden, and to him Mr. Pickwick called lustily, "Hollo there!" ! The red-headed man raised his body, shaded his eyes with his hand, and stared, long and coolly, at Mr. Pickwick and his companions. "Hollo there!" ! Repeated Mr. Pickwick. "Hollo!" ! Was the red-headed man's reply. "How far is it to Dingley Dell?" ! Better 7 mile. Is it a good road? No, tain't. Having uttered this brief reply, and apparently satisfied himself with another scrutiny, the red-headed man resumed his work. "We want to put this horse up here," said Mr. Pickwick. "I suppose we can, can't we?" Want to put that 'ere horse up, do we? Repeated the red-headed man, leaning on his spade. "Of course," replied Mr. Pickwick, who had by this time advanced, horse in hand, to the garden rails. "Missus," roared the man with the red head, emerging from the garden, and looking very hard at the horse. "Missus." A tall bony woman straight all the way down in a coarse, blue pelisse, with the waist an inch or two below her armpits, responded to the call. "Can we put this horse up here, my good woman?" said Mr. Tubman, advancing, and speaking in his most seductive tones. The woman looked very hard at the whole party, and the red-headed man whispered something in her ear. "No," replied the woman, after a little consideration, "I'm afeard on it." Afraid? Exclaimed Mr. Pickwick. "What's the woman afraid of?" It got us in trouble last time," said the woman, turning into the house. "I won't have nothing to say to un." Most extraordinary thing I have ever met with in my life," said the astonished Mr. Pickwick. I really believe," whispered Mr. Winkle, as his friends gathered round him, "that they think we have come by this horse in some dishonest manner." What? Exclaimed Mr. Pickwick, in a storm of indignation. Mr. Winkle modestly repeated his suggestion. "Hollo, you fellow," said the angry Mr. Pickwick, "do you think we stole the horse?" "I'm sure he did," replied the red-headed man, with a grin which agitated his countenance from one auricular organ to the other. Saying which he turned into the house, and banged the door after him. "It's like a dream," ejaculated Mr. Pickwick, "a hideous dream. The idea of a man's walking about all day with a dreadful horse that he can't get rid of. The depressed Pickwickians turned moodily away, with the tall quadruped, for which they all felt the most unmitigated disgust, following slowly at their heels. It was late in the afternoon, when the four friends and their four-footed companion turned into the lane leading to Manor Farm, and even when they were so near their place of destination, the pleasure they would otherwise have experienced was materially damped as they reflected on the singularity of their appearance, and the absurdity of their situation. Torn clothes, lacerated faces, moldy shoes, exhausted looks, and, above all, the horse. Oh, how Mr. Pickwick cursed that horse! He had eyed the noble animal from time to time with looks expressive of hatred and revenge. More than once he had calculated the probable amount of the expense he would incur by cutting his throat, and now the temptation to destroy him, or to cast him loose upon the world, rushed upon his mind with tenfold force. He was roused from a meditation on these dire imaginings by the sudden appearance of two figures at a turn of the lane. It was Mr. Wardle, and his faithful attendant, the fat boy. "Why, where have you been?" said the hospitable old gentleman. "I've been waiting for you all day." "Well, you do look tired."
"What?"
"Scratches." "Not hurt, I hope, eh?" "Well, I am glad to hear that very." "So you've been spilt, eh?"
"Never mind. Common accident in these parts. Joe, he's asleep again. Joe, take that horse from the gentleman, and lead it into the stable."
The fat boy sauntered heavily behind them with the animal, and the old gentleman, condoling with his guests in homely phrase on so much of the day's adventures as they thought proper to communicate, led the way to the kitchen. "We'll have you put to rights here," said the old gentleman, "and then I'll introduce you to the people in the parlor. Emma, bring out the cherry brandy. Now, Jane, a needle and thread here. Towels and water, Mary. Come, girls, bustle about." Three or four buxom girls speedily dispersed in search of the different articles in requisition, while a couple of large-headed, circular-visaged males rose from their seats in the chimney corner, for, although it was a May evening, their attachment to the wood fire appeared as cordial as if it were Christmas, and dived into some obscure recesses, from which they speedily produced a bottle of blacking and some half-dozen brushes. "Bustle!" said the old gentleman again, but the admonition was quite unnecessary, for one of the girls poured out the cherry brandy, and another brought in the towels, and one of the men, suddenly seizing Mr. Pickwick by the leg, at imminent hazard of throwing him off his balance, brushed away at his boot till his corns were red hot, while the other shampooed Mr. Winkle with a heavy clothes brush, indulging, during the operation, in that hissing sound which hostlers are wont to produce when engaged in rubbing down a horse. Mr. Snodgrass, having concluded his ablutions, took a survey of the room, while standing with his back to the fire, sipping his cherry brandy with heartfelt satisfaction. He describes it as a large apartment, with a red brick floor and a capacious chimney, the ceiling garnished with hams, sides of bacon, and ropes of onions. The walls were decorated with several hunting whips, two or three bridles, a saddle, and an old rusty blunderbuss, with an inscription below it, intimating that it was loaded as it had been, on the same authority, for half a century at least. An old eight-day clock, of solemn and sedate demeanor, ticked gravely in one corner, and a silver watch, of equal antiquity, dangled from one of the many hooks which ornamented the dresser. "Ready?" said the old gentleman inquiringly, when his guests had been washed, mended, brushed, and brandied. "Quite," replied Mr. Pickwick. "Come along, then." And the party, having traversed several dark passages, and being joined by Mr. Tubman, who had lingered behind to snatch a kiss from Emma, for which he had been duly rewarded with sundry pushings and scratchings, arrived at the parlor door.
Welcome, apostrophe said their hospitable host, throwing it open and stepping forward to announce them. Welcome, gentlemen, to Manor Farm. Apostrophe. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.